Stand by for the fastest 60 minutes in Jewish radio. It's time for the Jewish Experience. And mazel tov to all the recent graduates from all this area schools. Kids are all excited and they're all happy. We had a lot of graduation ceremonies this week, and they're moving on to bigger and better things. It's great to have them. Hi, I'm Hirsch DeLynn, your host. You are tuned in to Pittsburgh's only Jewish radio program, The Jewish Experience. Our parsha this week is Korach. It's Challenge Authority Week on the JE. It's also Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. This is the famous part of the Torah where Korach, someone who had the power and privilege of a Levi, who serves God by serving the Kohanim, in the priests in the Mishkan, he wanted more power. He wanted, in fact, to challenge Moses for the leadership. Of course, Moses, the humble man that he was, simply told Korach to bring his offering, and Moses would bring his offering, and whichever God will choose will be okay with Moses. He gave Korach the night to think it over, because he knew it was going to happen. But sure enough, Korach showed up to challenge Moses the next day, and, well, the earth opened up and swallowed Korach and his faction, but his sons repented just in time and were saved. Aaron's incense offering stopped the plague that began right after the rebellion. And finally, God requires the truma, or uplifting offering, to be given to the Kohanim from the firstborn animals and from each crop. And speaking of uplifting offering, our dedicated staff is here to bring you the best in Jewish radio with Musical Moish, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, and Ms. Devorah DeLynn. So, sit back once again and enjoy 60 minutes of the best Jewish radio in Pennsylvania. And, of course, we'll have your community announcements and a bunch of mazel tovs this week, along with current news fresh from Israel National Radio coming up in a half hour. Special guest today is Rabbi Manas Friedman, and he is the director of Beis Chana, a women's institute in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And with Gimel Thomas coming up, the Yort site of the 13th Yort site of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, we're going to talk a little bit about the Rebbe's interest in ensuring women are given the opportunity for serious learning, and also a little bit more about the Rebbe and what he's been doing in the world prior to Gimel Thomas. And that's ahead on the second hour. You know, we mention each week that we need your financial support to keep your JE on the air. Well, although some of you have responded, it's not been enough to sustain the program. So, you know, we really need your help. We have live remotes planned for Squirrel Hill and other exciting projects, but we do need your support. Please contact us at 412-979-5770 or jewishexperience@verizon.net with your pledge, and do it today, even before Shabbos. Rabbi Goldwasser's Torah lesson is sponsored by Reb Yisrael Zerlo, and his popular story segment is sponsored by Perfect Flooring. They take the showroom to you. The community news and announcements is sponsored by Kramer's Windows and Glass Block. The popular Feminine Perspective and Rabbi Eisen's Moment in Jewish History is available for sponsorship, so give us a call and we'll get you right in there. Remember, if you enjoy listening to our program, your financial support continues to be critical to making it available to you in your homes each week. And we do work hard to bring you the best in Jewish programming, but we do need you as partners with us. As always, we thank our regular sponsors, Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, Next Generation Financial Services, First Mariner Bank, Pittsburgh Simcha Orchestra, led by our own Musical Moishe, and Artistic Photography. And don't forget to ask for a special gift of a beautiful refrigerator magnet. We still have some, and we keep getting them in. That is yours free when you call us at 412-979-5770, or you can send us an email at jewishexperience@verizon.net. And don't forget, candlelighting time this week is 8:34 p.m. So get ready, sit back, and here he comes, everybody's favorite musical director, it's Uncle Moishe.
Well, good afternoon, a good night of Shabbos. I'm Moshe Pekar, your musical maven. My job here is to get you in the mood for Shabbos and get you folks tapping around the kitchen there as you get ready for another Shabbos on this splendid Friday afternoon. So let's get you going here with a little Ruach Neshama. This one's entitled Shivisi. You're tuned in and good to go if you keep it right here on the J.E.
Thank you.
Rabbi Goldwasser's Parsha segment this week is sponsored by Reb Yisrael Zerlo in honor of the Refua Shlema of Klal Yisrael for the healthy recovery of all the people of Israel. And now, our resident rabbi, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
This week's Sedra relates how Korach, a member of the priestly tribe of Levi, rebelliously challenged the leadership of Moshe and the high priesthood of Aaron. The Medrash relates that Korach confronted Moshe with several questions. One of them concerned the mezuzah. According to Torah law, Every house must have affixed on its right doorpost a mezuzah, a small scroll of parchment containing the first two paragraphs of Shema Yisrael. Korach demanded of Moshe, "Does a house filled with scrolls of the Torah require a mezuzah?" Moshe replied that the contents of the house were immaterial. A mezuzah was required on every doorpost. What is the logic of Moshe's reply to Korach? A mezuzah, after all, contains only two portions of the Torah. Why indeed should a house full of scrolls of the entire Torah require a mezuzah? And what if one has a mezuzah in a beautifully ornamented case lying on his shelf? Why is this not good enough? What is the significance of having a mezuzah nailed to the doorpost? The answer is that although the bookshelves of a house may be filled with Torah scrolls or other holy books, this may not ensure the religious behavior of its inhabitants. It is the mezuzah on the door which symbolizes the active awareness of Hashem's presence. The mezuzah is placed on the doorpost where one enters his home and leaves it. Symbolically, he takes its teachings of Hashem with him wherever he goes. His Torah is not consigned to a bookshelf, to a place of study alone, to an intellectual exercise. It is a factor in his life at all times, and all his actions are guided by the realization that Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, as it is written in the mezuzah. We are told of someone boasting to his rabbi about all the Torah he had learned and mastered. The rabbi replied, "You tell only of the Torah that you have learned, but what has the Torah taught you?"
Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220 for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender.
Will Israel ever see an end to violence? How will the war against Iraq's insurgents impact Israel? Will changes on the Supreme Court have any effect on the Jewish community? Is anti-Semitism in Europe on the rise? What can be done about it? For a look behind the headlines, read the Forward, the nation's Jewish newspaper. The Forward reveals the personalities, motivations, and histories that are fueling the news abroad. The Forward also provides an in-depth look at issues affecting us at home, with comprehensive reports on everything from politics and religion to culture and the arts. It even has its own matchmaking section for Jewish singles. Try 4 weeks free, then be billed $24.95 for another 26 issues. Not satisfied? Just write cancel on the bill and keep the first four issues free.
Call now for The Forward, 800-992-3333. That's 800-992-3333. All around us, life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time, and it's a comfort to know in your time of need that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947. and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association and work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. I personally met with Michael Hilgefort. And did you know that Burton Hirsch Funeral Home is even involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? In your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch, at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. They welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience, 412-521-2600.
Well, it's music time once again, so let's get you tapping. Here's your Sheba Boys Choir.
Yeah.
now it's time for A Moment in Jewish History with the author of Miraculous Journey, Rabbi Yosef Eisen.
In 1947, Great Britain controlled Palestine, and the Jews wanted independence while the Arabs were bitterly opposed. Frustrated by the endless hostilities, England decided to submit their Palestine problem to the United Nations. The United Nations decided to send a commission of 11 nations to Palestine to tour the country and make recommendations. Nations such as Yugoslavia, India, Guatemala, and Australia, which were distant from the conflict and had no vested interest in its outcome, were selected for the commission known as United Nations Special Commission on Palestine, or UNSCAP. The members traveled throughout Palestine in the summer of 1947, speaking to Jews and Arabs. A majority of UNSCAP members recommended partition. On November 29, 1947, the crucial vote came to the General Assembly, where each member nation, no matter how small, had one vote. The outcome was in doubt until the representative of the Soviet Union astounded the world by calling for the establishment of a Jewish state in part of Palestine. This vote assured the passage of the partition resolution, for the Soviet Union controlled the votes of its satellite nations. In the end, 33 nations voted in favor, 13 against, including all the Arab and Muslim nations, and 10 abstained, including Great Britain. Despite being allotted only 3 barely contiguous snippets of land for the Jewish state, and the frightful prospect of a brutal war with the Arabs, a great joy erupted in the Jewish world, where even many non-Zionist Jews realized an extraordinary moment in Jewish history had come to pass. What else but divine providence could have brought the United States and the Soviet Union, two bitter ideological enemies, which had voted on the same side only twice in 50 years, to support the founding of the first Jewish state in so many years? Although the Jews accepted the minuscule parcels allotted to them with great reluctance, the Arabs refused to recognize the UN resolution, stating that the Jews could not control any land in Palestine. Arab-instigated violence broke out immediately, with attacks on the Jewish quarters of Jerusalem, Haifa, and Jaffa, and on Jewish settlements around the country. Throughout the Arab world, riots erupted against Jewish communities that had existed for hundreds, even thousands of years, eventually leading to the flight of hundreds of thousands of Jews from Arab lands and the destruction of great ancient communities. And on that note, I remain Yosef Eisen, wishing you a very, very pleasant Shabbos.
This week's news segment is brought to you by Kramer's Windows and Glass Block. When your requirements call for replacement windows or glass block, call Ed at 412-848-2262. That's 412-848-2262.
Now, from the Israel National Radio newsroom, here's Ernie Singer.
Jerusalem police barring Muslim men under the age of 45 and women under the age of 35 from entering the Temple Mount Friday because of the security situation and warnings of violence, according to newly appointed Jerusalem Police Chief Ilan Franco. Franco citing the upheaval in Gaza as the underlying reason for the limitations. Tens of thousands of Muslims usually attend prayers at the holy site on the Islamic holy day. In spite of initial talk by Hamas members in Gaza about the Islamic future of that PLO-assigned area, Musa Abu Marzouk, deputy to Damascus-based Hamas head Khaled Mashal, says that Gaza will not turn into an Islamic regime under Sharia law. Abu Marzouk also rejecting the idea of separating the PLO-assigned areas into two distinct entities, one in Gaza and one in Judea and Samaria. Security sources taking issue with Prime Minister Ehud Olmert's idea of sending a multinational peacekeeping force into Gaza following the Hamas takeover. The sources telling the Ma'ariv Daily's NRG website, any force placed in Gaza would become a target and would not aid in achieving any goal. Police sources have told the Haaretz Daily that Olmert will probably be questioned as soon as next week regarding the government's sale of the controlling shares of Bank Leumi. The new commander of the police's National Fraud Investigations Unit, Brigadier General Shlomi Ayalon, says that the police's investigation of the Prime Minister will be thorough. Quoting Ayalon, "We are trying to carry out the investigation with the utmost professionalism." Defense Minister Amir Peretz has decided to cancel his planned trip to the Paris Air Show early this coming week because of the ongoing instability in Judea, Samaria, and Gaza, and in order to prevent a situation in which he, Prime Minister Olmert, and Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni are all absent from the country simultaneously. Livni has announced she plans to cut her current trip short and return to Israel Sunday because of the chaos in the PLO, Olmert off to the United States. With those three out of the country, Vice Premier Shimon Peres and newly elected Labor Party leader Ehud Barak would have been left as the senior political leaders. Peres is busy preparing to take over as president of the country. He promised the United Torah Judaism Party that he would work to cancel or at least lower the profile of next Thursday's planned homosexual pride parade in Jerusalem if the Haredi Religious Party would back him in this past week's presidential voting. The Eidah Haredit Religious Council is organizing a massive demonstration set for Sunday on a main road near the Mea Shearim neighborhood in Jerusalem, in which at least 100,000 people are expected to protest the homosexual march. Four people were arrested Thursday night for throwing rocks at police and vehicles as hundreds of people protested against the parade and burned tires in the streets of Jerusalem and B'nai Brak. Yitzhak Ben Yisrael, who is scheduled to be sworn in on Monday to replace Peres as Kadima Knesset member, has criticized Prime Minister Olmert for his mismanagement of the Second Lebanon War last summer, but has not called for Olmert's resignation. Ben Yisrael telling the Jerusalem Post, "The government failed in the war, but I don't know any country in the world where a government that failed quit." The former Major General calling for the army to enter the Gaza Strip as soon as possible. He said it would be easier to respond to Qassam attacks now that Hamas had taken over the Gaza Strip because now every rocket had the same address. Ben Yisrael heads the Israel Space Agency and the Defense Studies Program at Tel Aviv University. In an interview with government television, Ben Yisrael asked if there was a possibility he would become the first member of Knesset sent to space. He answered, "A lot of MKs are space cadets, but I don't think they should be sent to space." A Qatari paper has reported that Syria is making concrete preparations for fighting a war against Israel this summer. The paper reporting that the Syrian government has removed the government archives and the state archives from the Damascus area, indicating planning for war. Richard Salt, director of trade and investment at the British Embassy in Tel Aviv, thinks the boycott of Israeli goods declared by Unison, Britain's largest trade union, should not be taken too seriously. Speaking to the Yediot Ahronot's Ynet news service, Salt said, "Unions have the right to vote on whatever they want, but the British government opposes a financial embargo on Israel just as it opposes any form of boycott." Continuing to quote, "Economic relations between the two nations are very good and will continue that way in any case." Shabbat is Lamed, or the 30th of Sivan, celebrating Rosh Chodesh, the beginning of the new month of Tammuz on the Jewish calendar. Listen to Malka Fleischer's Eshet Chayil show to find out how to greet the new month. The weather forecast: continued clear to partly cloudy with no significant change in temperature through Shabbat. Slightly cooler Sunday, slightly warmer on Monday. In Jerusalem and Haifa on Friday, 28 degrees centigrade, 82 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
We want to wish our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land a very peaceful and restful Shabbat.
It's time for the Mazel Tovs. First, a hearty Mazel Tov to all the graduates from all the schools, Hillel, Yeshiva, and some of the other ones that all their kids are going on to schools, most of them out of the area. Wish them a lot of Hatzlacha, and I know they'll be doing great. And also, Uriel and Helen Bachrach and family on the bar mitzvah of their son, Yehoshua. Mr. and Mrs. Zev Rudolph on the birth of a grandson. Dr. Victor and Donna Stiebel on the bat mitzvah of their daughter, Shana. It's our next door neighbors. Wish them a great mazel tov on that one. Rabbi Yaakov and Hannah Fischel on the birth of a son. Rabbi Moshe and Batya Isaacs on the bar mitzvah of their son, Manny. Dr. Harvey and Ruth Henteleff on the birth of a grandson. And finally, Rabbi Nussen and Sarah Sachs on the birth of a grandson. Time is literally flying away. It's unbelievable. We've got to hang on to every day and make it count. Mazel tov to all. Let's take a look around the community and take a look at some of the events happening. Young Israel is having its annual Father's Day pancake breakfast, which is a tradition since 1997, 10 years old. The breakfast takes place from 9 to 11 this Sunday. All dairy items are Hull of Israel, so don't forget to stop by for the annual Father's Day pancake breakfast at Young Israel. The community Pirkei Avos classes for women are still going on in the community at area synagogues. Also, don't forget to mark the date, Jewish Community Day at Kennywood Park, Sunday, August 26th. And more details will be following. The Meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous meets at Shari Torah every Sunday evening from 7 to 8:30. The program is a recovery group for people who cannot control their eating and or their weight. The program is not for women only. Men are invited. For more information, call Elon at 412-422-2224. And as you remember, a couple of weeks ago, we had Dr. Robert Schwartz, Reuven Schwartz, on the program, talking about his new book on holy eating, The Spiritual Secret for Eternal Weight Loss. Well, he's got some groups that are starting to help keep it off. For men, Thursday, June 28th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Schwartz Home, 5471 Pawcusset. And for women, Sunday, July 8th, 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. at the Schwartz Home, same address, 5471 Pawcusset. And he indicated there's an optional donation for the American Diabetes Association to sponsor his Tour de Cure cycle ride to help fight the diabetes epidemic. So there's all kinds of ways to skin the weight off your body. You heard him just recently on our program talking about this. So it should be interesting. And if you have an interest, you can always give him a call and come on over to his program. For more information, you can always give him a call at 412-805-8800, 412-805-8800. And let them know you're coming. If you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, please call us at 412-979-5770, or you can email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. Don't forget, candlelighting time is 8:34 p.m. I'd like to welcome to the program today Rabbi Manus Friedman, who is the director of the Beis Chana Women's Institute in Minneapolis, Minnesota, one of the pioneers in Jewish women's education. And we have him here in Pittsburgh visiting. He has a daughter that recently graduated from yeshiva schools, and we're great to have him. Rabbi, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Rabbi, there is this Tuesday, is Gimel Tammuz, the third of the month of the Jewish month of Tammuz. And it is a time where it's the yahrzeit of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And many people know about the Rebbe, and they know that he set up these Chabad houses throughout the world. But many don't know much about the Rebbe himself. Can you tell us just for a few minutes what happened when the Rebbe took over and what he did that fundamentally changed from the other six Rebbeim that had been in there before him?
Well, the world changed. That's, you know, the Rebbe faced a completely new world.
Mm-hmm.
Very different from the world that the other previous Rebbes dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they were in Europe, they were in Russia, and the Rebbe was in America, which is a huge change. And the mass media had captured the world in the days of the Rebbe, which didn't exist before.
Sure.
So the opportunity for outreach, and the opportunity for Jews to influence each other, you know, from across the globe and so on, it was a whole new world.
Sure, but didn't the
Rebbe was, you know, the Rebbe was ready for it. He was perfectly in tune with the needs of the generation and the opportunities of the generation.
Okay, and one of the things that I think he there was some controversy is that some of the, speaking of the media, that he used television and he used radio and he used anything actually at his disposal to put out the message of Ahavas Yisrael, of love of Jews, of love of Israel, and trying to get the Jewish people as a whole to come back closer to their roots. And he was criticized for that, was he not?
Oh, in some very limited and very insulated communities,
mm-hmm.
who felt that television for the Rebbe to be on television would introduce television to the Jewish community,
mm-hmm.
but they were really way behind the times. So the Rebbe didn't introduce television; it was already established. And what the Rebbe did on the television, in addition to everything else, was to talk about the seven Noahide laws. So the Rebbe was really communicating to the whole world.
Sure.
And in fact, for the 10 years or so that the Rebbe was on satellite TV. I did the simultaneous translation.
Uh-huh. So, the, you know, one of the things, too, and it's kind of amazing, I guess, from the leadership of what the Rebbe did, is that he built up this incredible organization that basically has his emissaries, or his shluchim, in almost every city in the world, and just about at this point, is still growing. And when he passed from, so to speak, the physical body, many people considered or figured that Lubavitch wouldn't make it because such a charismatic leader passed away, and yet they not only regrouped, they started to grow. How did that happen? I mean, there's been so many people that have felt that it just wouldn't last.
Well, one of the unique things about Hasidus and the Rebbe is that this was not a group of people or an individual, like you say, a charismatic individual, who wanted to sell something to the public or wanted to move things in his direction. It was a very different thing. It was more what you call organic. The Rebbe was talking about the true nature of the Jewish people and of each individual Jew. And he was basing everything, banking all his efforts and all of his activities on the fact that Jews are organically Jewish. They can't help it. They want to be Jewish. They will be Jewish. They will respond to a Jewish message. And so bring them their heritage. Get it to them. So the Rebbe wasn't selling anything in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a group or a movement or a project trying to succeed. It was really uncovering the truth of the Jewish people, of Jewish destiny, of the nature of the Jew. And it turns out that that's absolutely correct and true. So Jews want to be Jewish, and Jews want to do Torah and want to do mitzvahs, and therefore, even after Gimel Tammuz, the influence continues to spread because it's true of the Jew. It's a very different thing. I'm not sure how to exactly bring this, make this very clear, that it's not like the various groups who are trying to sell something,
mm-hmm.
who are trying to convince you of something, who are trying to drum up support or membership. That was not the Rebbe's project at all. It was more like, this is your thing, this belongs to you, this is what you're looking for, this is what you need, and I'll just provide it for you. And since that need is true, and Jews really are looking for their Jewishness and for the authentic expression of their Jewishness, that's why this will continue to grow.
Sure.
And it has to.
Yeah. And it's also neat in that sense that Chabad houses themselves from the beginning were made self-supporting, and then so they could continue within their own communities and grow within their own communities, independent, so to speak, of New York, even though they get a lot of their energy from the headquarters. So it is kind of a unique institution, and it's growing, and it's still very vibrant today.
There's no question that the Rebbe's organizational skills were unusual, but that doesn't explain how after Gimel Tammuz the growth not only continues but has spiked.
Right.
So, in addition to the brilliance of the movement, of the structure, of the organizational planning, and so on and so forth,
sure.
There's simply the fact that Jews really do want to be Jewish.
Yeah, thank God.
Other movements now, other groups are catching on, and they realize that outreach is the only way to go.
Sure, it has to be the way to go. So,
yep.
Okay, but another innovative thing the Rebbe did, and of course this is your particular area, so I want to talk about this for a few minutes, is to focus on and promote women's Jewish education, which prior to the Rebbe and prior to, I guess, this 20th century, is that women really learned from their mothers and really didn't have a place, so to speak, to go to learn in a formal sense. And I understand you've been one of the founders of Beis Chana, which is a women's institute. Is this something the Rebbe directed you to do?
Well, the way it works is that Hasidim have to show a little initiative.
Mm-hmm.
The Shluchim have to show some initiative and come up with projects and come up with ideas. And then the Rebbe will either approve it or discourage it. he'll either support it or it'll fade. So this project that Rebbe supported very enthusiastically allowed us to use his mother's name. I think we were, I think, the second institution that the Rebbe allowed his mother's name to be used. His mother's name was Chana.
Mm-hmm.
And since 1970, the ongoing success of this program is just absolutely astounding. Without any advertisement, without any effort, it just continues. It just goes on and on and on, and women come from all over the world, certainly all over the United States, for this crash course on Jewish thinking. And it includes women who are religious, who come from religious homes, women from Israel, who come to Minnesota to enhance or enrich their Jewish life and their Jewish knowledge. And, of course, the way the Jewish woman goes, that's how the Jewish family will go.
Absolutely.
So this is every moment of every moment and every effort that we invest in this is pays off in dividends. I was just in Israel, just came back from Israel, and I see all the women who had attended in the 1970s who are now living Jewish lives with Jewish families, and they introduced me to their daughters who now would, you know, their teenage daughters who would now like to come to Minnesota for their shot at Beis Chana. So it is absolutely unbelievable that the resilience of the Jewish people to bounce back. And this will go down in history as the major significant event of the 20th century. Not the Holocaust, not the State of Israel, the renaissance of Yiddishkeit.
So if, and obviously the school, as big as it's grown, always has room for more.
Well, it's a crash course. It's a seminary.
Mm-hmm.
It's a seminar, I mean. And people don't stay for more than 3 weeks.
Oh, okay.
At a time. And that's all it really takes.
Okay.
You know, if you can't say it in 3 weeks, you can't say it at all.
Yeah, but that kind of differs from I guess, Machon Chana in New York, in that some they stay for, you know, years. So,
right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a full-time yeshiva. But Beis Chana in Minnesota is an introductory crash course seminar on Jewish thinking, Jewish life, that sets people on their path, and then either they'll continue in yeshiva, or they'll go back to work, go back to their families. So it's women of all ages, not just school age. It's for teenagers during the summer months, and for adult women during the other sessions of the year. So it has been a fantastic, fantastic experience. We've had probably, on the conservative side, we've had probably 12,000 women.
Wow.
Have gone through Beis Chana.
So we are almost out of time here, and if let's say there are women listening that say, well, this sounds absolutely outstanding, or even friends of women that say this is outstanding, how do they get in touch with you or with the school to try to arrange a time to go out there?
Well, you go online, Beis Chana, BAISCHANA, Beis Chana.
.org.com?
Extraordinary Learning.
Okay.
But you don't have to type that in. Just type in Beis Chana, and you'll find it.
Okay.
And it will give you the times, the places, because we move around.
Okay.
The teenage session starting in July will be in Vermont, in a resort in Vermont for three weeks. And then in August for grown-up women, for adult women, back in Minnesota. So check the exact dates on the web.
Very nice. Well, we are out of time. Rabbi Manus Friedman, director and, I guess, founder also, co-founder of the Beis Chana Women's Institute in Minneapolis, Minnesota, who's in the Mazel Tov to you, of course, for your daughter who graduated, and have a great Shabbos.
Thank you, and see you too.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
W-E-B-O.
If you like what you hear or you have an idea for selections on a future show, you can email me, Moshe Picard, keyplayer@hotmail.com, and we'll try and do it.
Now it's time to take a look at the feminine side of things with the feminine perspective. Here's Miss Devorah DeLynn.
When approached to speak about Hashkafa, guidance in Jewish life, many people often speak about the importance of ma'aseh, actions. Don't be a couch potato, get up and start doing things. Yes, very easy to say, but hard to do. Actually, I read something that really spurred me to get out of bed. Nature's Song, a book on the beautiful Perek Shira, the song of all creations, tells us about the rooster, whose song is his famous crow. By the sixth crow, The rooster is telling anyone left in bed, past the time his body actually needs to sleep, that it's time taken away from his rewards in this world and in the world to come. How so? He's taking away the time when he could be doing something to help himself physically in this world, maybe working more and earning more money. And he's taking away time spiritually. Maybe he could be using that extra time to learn. When you look at it from that point of view, it's hard to stay in bed. In Parshas Korach, we learn about a common, yet puzzling episode that occurred in the desert. Korach, a relative of Moshe Rabbeinu, wishes to take over as leader. Okay, many people want to do that, but really, where did he get the idea that he's not only just as good, but better than Moshe Rabbeinu at doing the job? Yes, he had his wife's ambitions being poured into his ear, but really, it still seems quite incredulous. The Lubavitcher Rabbi gives us a clear explanation for Korach's otherwise dubious actions. When the spies came back and told bad things about Eretz Yisrael, their ultimate downfall showed the preference Judaism places on actions over intellectual pursuits. The spies wanted to stay in the desert and live an entirely spiritual life, but that was not what God wanted from them. God wanted from them to go out into the world and elevate the world and its inhabitants. Korach looked at this and thought, yes, Moshe is definitely holier than the rest of us, but it's not intellectuality that counts, it's actions. We all do the same things he does, so why should he be leader over us? Korach's obvious mistake, of course, was that he forgot a crucial part of the actions. That is, that the action must shine with spiritual inspiration and can't merely be done for selfish physical pursuits. A healthy balance must therefore be instilled in life. A person shouldn't closet themselves away from the world, but he also shouldn't become an automaton and just do the rituals. He needs the thought and the action. Our sages teach us that the world was made with the letter He, the fifth letter of the Hebrew alphabet. The top part of the He symbolizes thought, the connecting leg on the right symbolizes speech, and the little disconnected leg to the left stands for action. In a He, the three components are balanced. Thought is influenced from above, speech is influenced by thought, and together they influence action. Korach's name spells out the problems with his theory. In the first letter, Kuf, the leg on the left extends down past the speech side, showing us that his reckless actions were not being influenced by sound reason and speech. The second letter, Resh, the action leg is missing entirely. They weren't even under the influence of thought, speech, or the one above. And finally, in the Ches, all three lines are connected, showing us that his actions were no longer under the jurisdictions of good judgment and reason. Was Korach wrong? Yes. To show disrespect to a leader, no matter how related you are, is wrong in anybody's case. But he did show us something of worth, the value of actions, and more importantly, the guidance of Torah ideals over everything we do, for then we can never go wrong. Have a good Shabbos.
Rabbi Goldwasser's story segment is brought to you by Perfect Flooring, 412-551-1697. Yitzchak Chico Kadosh says, we bring the showroom to you. Call 412-551-1697 for Perfect Flooring. And now, our renowned storyteller, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
Of all my Yechidus experiences, related Rabbi Yehuda Leib Posner, the one I remember most wasn't only for me. During the spring of 1965, I was an assistant principal of an elementary school for girls in New Jersey. I had been trying to direct the 8th grade graduates to enroll in religious high schools. I suggested that they visit New York City and acquaint themselves with the different educational opportunities available for them there. I organized a trip to New York on Sunday with a stop in Crown Heights and a tour of the Lubavitch School. I then phoned the office at 770 and arranged with the secretary, Rabbi Sholem Mendel Simpson, to arrange that the girls meet the Rebbe at Yechidus for the girls at 3 o'clock on Sunday. The trip was very pleasant, and at 2:45 on Sunday, we were waiting outside 770. However, in the office I was told that the Rebbe had unintentionally not been informed of the arrangement. Rabbi Simpson asked us to wait a short while and then announced that the girls would be able to see the Rebbe after Mincha at 3:15. It was Pesach Sheni, the minor holiday instituted to enable all those who had not offered a sacrifice on Pesach to compensate by bringing an offering on this date. The Rebbe spoke to the girls about the lesson one can learn from this holiday. Nothing is ever lost. There is always an opportunity to compensate. After the Rebbe finished talking to the girls, I requested an opportunity for a personal yichidus, and the Rebbe consented. Afterwards, I wondered how great an exception the Rebbe had made to grant the girls yichidus on such short notice. I was curious how far in advance it was really necessary to schedule yichidus. I asked Rabbi Simpson if he could arrange yichidus for me in the near future. Rabbi Simpson shook his head. "Of course, I don't mean tomorrow or the next day," I said quickly, fully aware of the waiting line for yichidus. "I had in mind about 6 weeks from today." Rabbi Simpson again shook his head. "It's absolutely full. There are no openings until after Sukkot." I understood something about the Rebbe's choice of priorities. For myself, I had been told that I would have to wait at least 5 months to receive a yichidus. But when six young girls might possibly be influenced in their choice of high school education, the Rebbe took time in midday to speak to them, despite the lack of previous notification. And the Rebbe's words made a difference. Most of the six girls decided to continue their Jewish education. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, wishing you all a good Shabbos.
As we close out a Shabbos Rosh Chodesh Tammuz edition of the Jewish Experience radio program, remind you of a couple of events. Young Israel, annual Father's Day pancake breakfast. Make sure you take your father out there. 9 to 11 this Sunday. And the Jewish Community Day, Kennywood Park, Sunday, August 26th. More details on that. The meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous, Shari Torah. Sunday evening, 7 to 8:30. Call Ilana, 412-422-2224. Also, Holy Eating with Robert Schwartz at his home, Thursday, June 28th, 7 to 8:30 p.m. for men, 5471 Pecosette. And for women, Sunday, July 8th at the Schwartz home, 5471 Pecosette. And check that out. And if you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, you can call us at 412-979-5770. Or you can email Jewish Experience all the time, 24-7. 24-6, that is. Don't do it on Shabbos. Jewish Experience at Verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. And we would like to thank Rabbi Manus Friedman for being with us today, the director of the Beis Chana Women's Institute, sharing some keen insights into the Lubavitcher Rebbe and women's education. And, of course, our faithful and cutting-edge staff, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, MusicalMoish.com, Dr. Michael Shulman, Mr. Vora DeLynn, and, of course, our ever-present, ever-faithful engineer, Jeremy LeBostenstein, for another outstanding show. Don't forget, candlelighting time is 8:34 this week. It's been fun, but I do have to run. Till next week, I'm Hirsch DeLynn. Have a wonderful and restful Shabbat. Shabbat. Shalom. Shalom.